The University Tower chimes, ringing another session of Ask the Professor, the show on which you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me introduce to you our panel for today. To my right, we're going to go counterclockwise. It's Professor Joe Abbasid.
Hi, how are you?
How's it going, Joe?
It's going good.
Excellent. You always put us pretty much all to shame with your snappy dressing.
No, actually, Professor Roach came in today in a suit.
Really?
Full-fledged suit. And he and I were talking in the hallway, and our web developer said, this is the best-dressed department on campus by far.
And, that's awesome. That's awesome.
Something different, I guess.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that.
Set the bar high.
I've done casual Fridays for the last couple of years, and I've enjoyed it. But I do enjoy, you know, setting myself apart from the students in most cases.
Right.
Not all, but most. Yeah. Most cases. Continuing around the table, it's Professor Jim Tubbs.
Hello. Happy meeting day.
Happy meeting.
That's what it's been for me.
Many, many meetings?
Not a lot. Just ones that I couldn't duck.
Oh, mm-hmm. I see. So any you had to run, though?
Well.
Jim, where there's a will, there's a way.
Meeting day.
I have got to a point where I've ran so many meetings, I don't care about going to meetings anymore if I'm not running them. I'm just like, oh, I just get to sit in the back and squawk? Oh, I can handle that.
Yep. Sitting in the back and squawking works well.
Also fun, right?
Very well.
Well, I hope that this is sort of a once-in-a-month style thing for you, Jim, so you can move on and to bigger and better.
It's not that frequent.
Okay.
No.
Good. I mean, we're into meeting cadence now, so
yes.
You know, my wife's like, how come I cannot locate you by phone? And I'm like, well, that happens once a month about this time. At the same time in October and November, don't call me then. What more can I say? Professor Dan Maggio is here, continuing around the table. He's enjoying the 100th volume of the Varsity News.
I'm looking back at the editors from the 80s, many of whom I know, and Manny Lim is on the bottom, who's
That's
a good
right.
friend of mine.
Mm-hmm. So our student newspaper started in essentially the fall of 1918, so it's celebrating its 100th volume with a celebration from folks who are still alive and some who've passed, like Neil Shine, probably one of our most successful journalistic graduates of the university. The place where the students published the Varsity News, or the VN out of now, is also called the Neil Shine Center in his honor. So pretty cool. How are you doing, Dan?
I'm good.
I think it's cool that you recognize some of those folks. That's nice.
I do.
Yeah. They're having a big reunion at our homecoming and try to get a bunch of people together.
I just had dinner with Chuck Bobian a week ago, and he mentioned the gathering.
Right.
His brother's on here, too.
Okay.
So I might come down just to see.
Yeah. Did you ever do anything for the VN when you were a student?
I read it.
He used it.
Nothing wrong with that.
I read it because my really good friend Joe Gathman wrote comics for a couple of years, and he was hilarious.
Excellent.
At doing so.
Nice. Continuing our circuit around the table, I was going to start with this, and I don't know where it got lost somehow, but Kathy used to say, it's just me and the boys. Professor Dave Chow is here.
Pleasure to be here, as always.
Did you ever cartoon for your school newspaper?
I was newspaper, yearbook, play, you name it.
Yeah,
I was the art department.
That sounds about right.
It was my way of sneaking out of every third class. There was one year I remember, I think it was my junior year in high school, that every person that wanted to run for homecoming queen and king, I did all of their posters.
Oh my gosh, that's incredible.
So I think my high school art teacher, because he used to, here, you need some poster board. I think he went through like 300 sheets.
Oh my gosh.
And I had to letter all of that.
Yeah. Wow.
So I was a machine.
Yeah, you were a machine.
Yes.
So. You're also, if you don't mind me saying, a humorist. So I think the two go together well, and you can pass commentary with your drawings every once in a while.
I try to.
I'm running for homecoming queen. Can you illustrate my campaign?
You know, trust me, I've every third commentary, you know, there's, you know, like free beer, vote for me for homecoming queen, and things like that.
Right.
Every third eye-catching thing, that every cliche you could possibly imagine.
So. I love it.
It works.
Well, folks, this is a program where you can send us questions regarding anything. I think it's been a while since we've had homecoming queen and king questions.
Yeah, I can't remember those for a while.
If you stump our panel, you can win one of our prizes. And if you don't stump the panel, you can win one of our prizes. Maybe we'll throw a copy of the Varsity News in with you.
Or pad it.
Yeah. You can send the questions to us in a number of ways. You can email us at atp@udmercy.edu. You can reach us on the web at udmercy.edu/atp or find us on Facebook. When last the Super Friends were assembled, we were taking on a set of questions with warmest regards, as he always sends them, from Valencia, California, Frank Burrows. We had just done this little sporkle tidbit. What do actor Patrick Duffy, Smashing Pumpkins singer Billy Corgan, and Patty Boyd, who was once married to George Harrison and Eric Clapton, although not at the same time, have in common? They're all famous Pats that were born on St. Patrick's Day because Billy Corgan's middle name is also Patrick. So we're moving on from the known to the unknown.
The unknown.
So we have four items, and we'd like to know the order in which they were invented. So I'll give them to you in the wrong order, and let's see if we can start with the earliest and make it to the most recent. The parking meter, the twist tie, fiberglass, shredded wheat.
Okay, I think shredded wheat first.
1890, yes. You are correct. What's okay. Next?
Twist tie.
No.
No. Parking meter.
A parking meter, yeah, 1935.
Yeah. Okay, so right. Now it's between the twist tie and what's the other option?
Fiberglass. Fiberglass is the third one, with yeah. The twist tie bringing up the rear in 1939.
Because we didn't need those until we had the cellophane of bread bags.
That's right. That's exactly right.
You would
right.
Think that the simplest thing on there, the twist tie, would have been the first.
But kind the question is, what do you need it for?
Right.
Well, I can give you 100 examples.
We've been creative in our uses of twist ties since the invention of the bread bag.
I can think of right. One thing. That's closing the bag.
I'm pretty sure there's some sort of drawer in the Mayo family kitchen that's full of used
twist ties. Oh, I know exactly where they are in my house. They also got rubber bands in it.
Right. They are useful when you have them, and then you can never find one when you need one. I have no other information. This is going to beg a lot of questions, but within 3 years, error bars of 3 years, can the prof say how long was the world's longest recorded marriage? I'm guessing it's a Guinness thing.
82.
97.
You know, I'm giving it to you with 82 because it's 86, and even though it's outside the error bars, I mean, okay. Do the math, you know?
Wow,
do the math.
Child, bride, and groom.
It's not that they probably lived forever, too.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's also true. Well, I mean, if they were 100.
Probably married at 14, 16.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Back in the day.
Yep.
That was common back then.
Freaky.
Unusual.
Freaky.
When she was 20, she probably said, I'm not sure that this was a good move. 80 years later.
Well, they were already working.
70 years
later. What's the present for?
86.
What's the present for
86? $1 million bills.
A fossil.
One at that point. Wheelchair.
Oh, wow.
So I'm coming up on my 20th next week.
Oh, pre-congratulations.
Oh, for 20th.
Platinum.
It's supposedly China or platinum.
China. There you go.
China as in the country?
I guess.
Big old chunk of China.
I see a vacation on your horizon.
Oh, my.
Now your twist ties inventions. Now you're booking cruises and travel itinerary right. For me.
I am.
Okay. Oh, my gosh.
I'm fine with that.
Professors, I'm going to list three things that comprise a category of things.
Twist ties.
What is the category that I'm talking about? Okay. Some of these things are called strozzapreti, seme de melone, and bucatini.
Strozzapreti, that's Italian.
Bread.
That is. Bread is a good guess, but incorrect.
Pasta.
They're pasta. Yeah, they're shapes of pasta.
Yeah, I knew it was something Italian because it all ended vowels.
Do you know what strozzapreti? Like, I've heard that on a cooking show, I'm sure.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
That's Lydia.
Followed up with some creme fraiche. Ooh, Lydia's Italy. That's Ooh. The real deal right there. Yeah, holy smokes. Favorite. You know, I've heard this one before, but it's been a while. Who was the first all-female performance group who sold 1 million copies of one song?
The Go-Go's.
It wasn't the Go-Go's. It was 1944, and the name of the song was Rum and Coca-Cola.
Andrews Sisters.
The Andrews Sisters,
oh, yeah. They were big.
Yeah.
Oh,
what was the song again?
They did Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy from That's Company right. B also.
Rum and Coca-Cola was the name of the song.
Wow. And then, of course, it was Rosemary Clooney, I think, who covered that song later to great acclaim.
I guess I've never heard it before. I'm going to have to
check
it out.
Oh, I've heard it. Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe time to update that record collection.
Jim saw it on Shindig. That's all.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. YouTube.
Well, you know, that was my parents' music.
And see, that's the thing.
And I like it.
Yep,
I
mean, that's the thing.
Because you're talking full orchestras, and you're talking music that has words and a beat and also a melody.
Sure.
So those things are nice.
Yeah. Every red-blooded Detroiter, knows that only one Major League Baseball pitcher has ever appeared on the cover of Rolling Stone Music Magazine.
Mark the Fidrich. Bird? Yes.
Yeah, yep. Mark Fidrich, the Bird. One of the most fantastical half seasons in history.
Now I'm wondering. Okay, not that I want this to happen, but how long is how long is Rolling Stone going to be around?
Oh, geez, it's so thin and small now.
I know.
I mean, the problem with talking that way, I'm pontificating. Maybe I should be elevated to do so. Is the fact that I don't know if any publication. I mean, the Free Press now is about 90% advertisements.
Yeah.
The New York Times is scaled way, way back, and they're still a journalistic source.
And the Village Voice just ended last month.
Oh, jeez. I mean,
are they all online now?
No, they're gone.
It's incredible. I mean, it's one thing for like Newsweek to go online.
Yeah.
But Village Voice just folded. I've stopped using the word magazine when I talk to my students. They definitely don't really know what that or a periodical is. So
and journal is something that they're only experienced reading online.
That's true.
And then for us, it's like, okay, editorial illustration. Good luck.
Yeah,
they were talking about the prices for art for like back in the day. Like people could make a living illustrating for Rolling Stone.
Oh sure, yeah,
not anymore. Not
if they don't exist.
They were talking about prices haven't risen since 1986.
Oh my. And you can't do that forever either. Otherwise, you go the way of the textbook industry. Yeah. Oh, organic chemistry costs $750. Who's buying this,
Textbook? Is that true?
Yeah.
What?
I haven't required a textbook in 5 years.
$750.
There's no sense in it. There are 10 perfectly legally free available organic chemistry textbooks online. Why would I expect them to pay a dollar? And they're all exactly the same. Here's a preview. Carbon makes 4 bonds. That's all you need to know. It's crazy.
Or when in doubt, scream resonance.
Oh, resonance. Nice. Nice. Oh, my students would appreciate that. When the Nintendo company was first founded, 1889 in Japan, what was their first product?
Paddleball?
No, but...
That's a really good guess.
Was it something. Gaming or was it something...
It is more? Something having to do with playing a game.
A bat.
A bat is a good guess? No.
Pinballs.
Not pinballs. You're too advanced.
Does it involve some kind of ball?
Wiffle ball.
It involves paper.
Paper.
Origami.
Pretty close.
Paper airplanes.
Paper airplanes.
Yeah, No.
Paper.
You know, the first thing they invented, that they were publishing was playing cards. In Japan.
Hmm.
And it became.
I kept thinking like Wiffle samurai swords or something like that.
Dan immediately went to, okay, if on Wii you can virtually play paddleball, then maybe they invented paddleball.
I was thinking, I wonder, it would be interesting to see their products over the years and how they morphed into what they are today.
Pretty fascinating. Let's think about it while we take a break.
It's an Ask the Professor flashback 1995.
Who said only in a police state is the job of a policeman easy?
Gore Vidal.
No, it's an American actor, director, filmmaker, stage director, theater.
Orson Welles.
That's right. Orson Welles. That's right. Who said moral indignation, jealousy with a halo?
That's nice.
Sarah.
Is that Amber
White? Said it.
No. And just joining us from the Department of History, the chairman of that department, Professor Sarah Gravel.
Somebody sitting in my chair. Out of my forage bowl.
Oh, totally relax. What about your bed?
Nobody's sleeping in my bed.
Okay.
Oh, you poor love.
We're back with these awesome questions. They are all over the map, just the ways we like them, from Frank Burroughs. Let's continue. What was the claim to fame of Anne and Dennis Clark of Massachusetts when they did this in 1643?
First married couple to disembark?
Very, very close. But what's the opposite first of divorce? Being married? First the first divorce of the new world. Yes.
In what year?
1643 is what it says.
Wow.
Massachusetts.
My ancestor got divorced in the colony not much after that.
Well, there you go. There you go. They could be related.
What would it take to get a divorce back then?
You had to go to a court.
Yeah, but here in the colonies, I mean,
but did you have to have
in the, well, this was in the Plymouth plantation.
Did you have to have an annulment, or did it have to be?
No, it was a divorce. It was because they were Puritans, so they recognized it as a legal marriage, but that they were ending the marriage.
Wow,
I wonder what the grounds were.
Well,
he couldn't provide a turkey.
Did you have to have a reason?
Yes.
So because nowadays you don't really.
Yeah, it wasn't easy.
Or
to
do
get
you
a divorce.
Even need them? I wouldn't know.
But it was a
seems like everybody has divorces these days. And
bite your tongue. I can't afford it.
We're at about 50% of marriages in the modern world.
Is there like a checklist? You can just check all the things that apply.
Oh, jeez.
Income.
Oh, my gosh.
No fun.
No, that's right. What laundry detergent made the claim it was, quote, stronger than dirt?
Ajax. Laundry detergent.
Laundry
stronger
detergent.
Stronger than dirt.
Can I ask a similarly related question just for Dave Chow's amusement?
Sure.
What laundry detergent was in the commercial that the Brady Bunch was filming?
Oh, my God.
Was it Pert? No.
Was it real or was it made up?
I don't know. I can't remember.
But maybe it was Pert. Although I thought Pert was shampoo.
Dave,
oh, yeah, it is shampoo.
Yeah.
Is that green bottle?
Green
bottle. I don't think it wasn't Pert. It was a laundry detergent. It was
Gain?
It was in a box.
Purex is in a blue bottle.
Yeah, I shall endeavor to find out the answer.
All right.
You shall endeavor.
We'll have to watch that episode.
I like endeavors.
We'll let Dave reconcile, bring himself back here because there's a design question.
Oh, Lordy.
Which fashion icon was responsible for Jackie Kennedy's pillbox hat?
Oleg Cassini.
Halston, wasn't it? Halston?
It says Halston here. It says Roy Halston.
Oh, yep. Cassini was her coat.
Clothier? Yeah.
Yes.
I see. Because Roy Halston. Pillbox. So what else is Roy Halston known for?
Cologne. He was kind of like the Lagerfeld of his time, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of women's clothing lines, yes. Though.
This fast food chain did not invent the drive-thru, but it was the first fast food chain to use a drive-thru. What was it? Not very popular in Michigan.
Burger Chef?
Was it In-N-Out?
Nope.
Oh, no.
Jack
in the Box.
Jack in the Box is what it says here.
Because I remember talking that little head.
You talk into the clown's mouth, right?
Yeah,
that's exactly
there
right.
There used to be one in Grand River and 8 Mile.
It was only like two tops in Michigan at any point in our history. We're more of a McDonald's Burger
Grand
King.
Grand River and 8 Mile, where El Nibble Nook is?
Maybe? Yeah.
Oh, I'm not kidding.
In the southeast corner. There was a Jack in the Box that turned into a Burger Chef. And now
it's now Wendy's.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. That's crazy.
El Nibble Nook. That place is still around.
Mm-hmm.
Burger Chef.
One of those,
I remember Burger Chef growing up. There was one in Berkeley.
Yeah, one in West Bloomfield, I think.
What's that?
Huh. El Nibble Nook. It's a chain.
El Nibble Nook. Oh, okay.
I know. It was a pretty high-end Mexican place, I remember. Because where my mom worked, one of the waitresses there would do double duty over there. That's all. So she would have to like, okay, I'm switching from Mexican to Chinese food. I got to remember which one's which.
Speaking of switching gears, what American band was led by lead singer Henry Wayne Casey? Whenever I hear the three words, I think... Lead singer or serial killer?
Hmm. Yeah.
No, that was John Wayne
Gacy.
Henry Clown. Wayne Casey.
Henry Wayne
band.
Casey.
Need some clues here?
Yeah.
So he went in the band. He went by initials that were not his own initials, but two letters.
Casey and the Sunshine Band.
There we go. Casey and the Sunshine Band. Yep. You got it. It's a little play on words. In what city is the oldest operating McDonald's? It opened on August 18th, 1953.
It's in San Bernardino, is it?
Yeah.
It's really close. It's close to that. It's Downey, California, but you're right there. That would have been the only franchise the McDonald's brothers opened after their original before Ray Kroc got involved.
Yeah.
We were talking at our library show about how cool the Founder movie is with
Very
Michael
good movie.
Keaton. Very cool.
Highly
cool
recommend.
Stuff. Just a couple more here, and we'll wrap up Frank's set. What is the more common term for a Wardian case? A Wardian case. A capital W, making it seem like it's
like
named
after
somebody.
Like a hope chest or something like that?
No, that's not what it says here.
A Wardian case.
These were all the rage when I was growing up. And people still have them, but...
Well, like, is it a farm?
You're getting closer with Ant Farm, getting closer.
I'm thinking, okay, what in our era was the rage back in the day?
I mean, this was my perception as an elementary school child, so it probably was warped in some way.
Pretty in case. Like a lunchbox?
You wouldn't put fish into this. You would not.
I wouldn't put fish into a lot of things.
Does
a
the
terrarium?
Bread, what was that?
Was it a terrarium?
It's a terrarium. Oh. Yeah, yeah. Oh, terrarium seemed to be all the rage when I was growing up.
That's called a Wardian case.
Yeah, a Wardian case.
Who's the Ward?
W-A-R-D-I-E-N?
I-A-N. I believe that somebody with the last name of Ward
Burt
was...
Ward. Robin. That's his name.
He branched out after
it. Wardian case. TV. If Stephanie were here, she would say that it was a way of observing, you know? There's okay. actually quite a, if you really want to have an eye-opening lost hour or two, a group of folks on, like, let's say YouTube that build aquariums and or aquaria and terraria and then monitor them 24/7 and then speed up the time. And basically it's like you're observing an ecosystem, you know, from beginning to end.
Yeah.
So it's kind of an interesting experiment to run. And yeah, YouTube's just a good place to host the video.
Actually, don't ask me why late night I've been watching this Canadian Ants channel on YouTube.
Canadian Ants?
Yes.
A-N-T-S?
This guy builds terrariums for ants and beetles and bugs and things like that.
Hmm.
And he's been transferring them from one case to another as like, check it out. Here comes the queen with your entire colony. I'm like, oh, dear Lord.
You're watching this. I love it.
Mind you, but he's building these amazing aquariums, terrariums or whatever.
That's not as exciting as curling.
No, it isn't.
But what is?
The narration is hilarious. It's so overly
I'm
dumb.
Sure it is. Yes.
So is it just about building or can you just watch?
Both. He builds them and then he stocks them with ants.
Right. I'm getting the term wrong, but the ones that I'm talking about are like, you know, they get some sort of plant ecosystem mini ecosystem, and then they introduce one animal or one insect or whatever, and then they introduce another that eats that, and then you're just sort of.
But he's also been getting to like the kind of like ants Earth. And the fire it's, ants and things like that.
On a it's very Sim City. Sim
do Earth. They well? Do they introduce any symbiotic ones, or are they all predators?
I've only seen them build colonies and cut leaves and move queens around.
It's hilarious. It's like you miss it for a few weeks and then you go check it out. It's like, all right, we're putting the single gorilla into the terrarium
with
now.
The 14 tigers.
Let's see if you'll survive.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I think that we all know that after Gordie Howe wore the number 9 for the Detroit Red Wings, that nobody else was going to wear it again. But how many Detroit Red Wings players wore number 9 before Gordie Howe did?
3.
I wasn't alive then.
3 is close.
4.
The answer is 0.
Oh.
0 wore before.
So he was
before.
The first to wear number 9.
First and last. It's kind of a cool place to be if you think about it, right?
Hmm.
Thanks for these awesome questions, Frank.
Yeah, thanks, Frank.
Send more. Please do.
Very, 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 very cool.
Interesting.
Yes.
Actually, I'm not that my father-in-law is going to hear this, but I'm picking up the new Gordie Howe book for him for his birthday.
Oh,
his son, the doctor, wrote a book, and he was interviewed on NPR the other day. It was a great article.
Okay,
I found out that the old Olympia Stadium used to have guard dogs. They were released at midnight.
What? That's incredible.
Yeah, I'm like, what? They had guard dogs at the night watchman was
like
just released
inside.
Oh, wow. Because he had talked about how Gordie Howe would stay and sign every autograph. But he would, of course, he brings the entire family down there, and he's still signing at midnight to get the last autograph out.
Mm-hmm.
And then
running from the dogs.
Yes. And they would watch them just release the hounds.
I guess so. Just like Mr. Burns, huh? Crazy. Well, we have an interesting twist that we're going to try on our show this season. Someone has generously sent in, anonymously, a giant set of questions, and we'll just sort of pick at them when we know we've got a little bit of time left at the end of the show. So here we go. Some miscellaneous topics from August 2018. The late English Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher, everybody knows.
The Iron Lady.
Yes, she studied chemistry at Oxford. She was actually a chemist. She's said to have had a part in the invention of what modern treat?
The
sleeping pill.
Ambien is my...
What am I?
Are you talking about her oratory skills?
So it would just be like an anti-anxiety pill or something, a treat?
A treat.
No, well, she created treat. Anxiety.
Makes you feel better.
She was not into anti-anxiety.
Are we talking something like a pastry?
Getting closer.
I don't want to know that a chemist invented anything that I... Yeah. But Matt's going to argue.
Yes,
Matt's
going to
argue with me.
Yes,
they did.
I'm going to argue with you.
Chemists invented a lot of things.
If only Kendra were here.
Oh, I know. So is this traditionally British?
No. As a matter of fact, probably could just walk a couple minutes from where we are and
donut.
Get this. Not a donut. Not a donut.
Pizza? Not pizza.
Fish and chips.
Fizzies.
Fizzies.
Slurpee.
You guys are cracking me up. I'll give it to you sort of roundabout way, a la, what is it called? Jeopardy. So the key thing is that the basic thing has existed for a long time. But what they did is they put a lot of air into it, which made it easier to serve. Hint, hint. Serve.
Ice cream?
Soft serve
soft
ice cream.
Really? Yes. Maggie Thatcher was involved in fluffing up ice cream?
Fluffing up the ice cream.
Maggie Thatcher and fluffing should never be used in the same sentence, Jim.
I have had this discussion.
On a first name basis with the former prime minister?
with students before. It's very, very interesting that basically the only added ingredient in ice cream that makes it soft serve is air, which makes it easy to push through tubes. And it's the reason why your soft serve cone essentially begins to melt immediately because air carries heat so well.
Yeah.
But if you have gelato, it'll last quite a bit longer because there's no air on the inside of it. So frankly, to be absolutely honest, it's one of those classic sort of modern twists. It's like we are literally serving you half a volume of air that you don't care about, but to put it into a cone and make it look all cool when it piles up.
I still like soft serve ice cream. You
it's wonderful.
Deter me.
It's wonderful.
It's a tactile thing.
Yeah, I go for gelato pretty much when I can. In 1818, Mary Shelley published her best-known book anonymously.
Frankenstein.
Now here's the kicker. Love these questions so far. She later published two books, The Last Man and Lodore. What name did she use to publish those books?
Abby Normal?
Mm-mm.
Oh, Victor Frankenstein?
I'm going to give you a half credit on that one. From the author of Frankenstein, no name.
Oh.
Because she identified with the book so deeply. That was actually a little trivia bit from the Detroit Free Press earlier this year. Pretty cool stuff.
I'm sorry. I will always go back to Young Frankenstein.
Nothing wrong with that. That's nothing wrong with that.
Terry Garr.
My wife actually, if you don't mind, being such a Halloween guy, ruined Frankenstein for me. And I probably shouldn't say that too much out loud. Because she was a literary major. And she's all like, that entire book is an analogy about being scared of becoming a mother. You understand that? And I'm like, no, I didn't. Because I've never had to worry about that before. However, now I get it. And it's still interesting, but it's lost its horror element, I think, when you start thinking about it that way. So it's time for us to say goodbye, so I'm going to go around the table and ask the professors to say goodbye. Professor Chow.
See ya.
Professor Maggio.
Goodbye.
Professor Tubbs.
Goodbye.
Professor Havisett.
Take care.
And now these words.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu. Tweet to us on Twitter @AskTheProfessor or using the hashtag AskTheProfessorUDM or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Ask the Professor is transcribed at the facilities of the Briggs Building in the Department of Communication Studies in the College of Liberal Arts and Education at the University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. Ask the Professor is produced and directed today by Michael Jason, and our executive producer is Dr. Vivian Dix. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Miles.